I'm going to proceed on the idea that everybody at least understands how to construct a label or a mirror. Labels, it seems, it sounds, it looks, you see me, sound, you look. A mirror is a repetition of the last one to three words-ish or specific selection. Once you get good at the last one to three words, you start picking one to three words out of different portions of the conversation of mirror. So everybody's going to pick two things they're passionate about. It doesn't matter what those things are. They could be food. They could be dogs. They could be bunny rabbits. I know you're passionate about bunny rabbits. Doesn't matter what those two things are. You will pair up with someone next to you. One of you will be the talker. The other person will be the negotiator. The negotiator is asked two what questions. What are you passionate about? I'm passionate about puppies. What about puppies makes you passionate? That's your second what question. Every response from the negotiator from that point on is a label or a mirror only. It's not, oh, I had puppies growing up. I set it on fire. You know, whatever you did when you were a kid. No sharing of common experiences, because that's not a label or a mirror. And then when we pair you up and you start out, one of you is a negotiator and the other is a talker, stay in role until we ask you to switch out. If someone is not particularly comfortable with the skills yet and they say, okay, I did this long enough, now let's talk about your passion. Now, we don't want you to do that. We have a very specific sequence going here. These are our reps. How many reps to get a skill? 63. These are our reps. This is the low-stakes practice. This is the no-stakes practice. Small-stakes practice for high-stakes results. Here's what it'll look like. Brandon's going to be the negotiator, and Derek is going to be the talker. So at the beginning, you're going to be able to ask two questions to get you started, and from there forward is going to be only labels and mirrors. So after you label four, after I have done four or five labels with Derek, then we will start pointing to people in the room to continue the conversation with Derek. So once you get pointed at, you got to come up with a label or mirror. A great way to get picked is to look away. All right, so two questions at the very beginning. First question, what's your passion?
Coaching basketball.
Coaching basketball. And then second question, what about coaching basketball makes you passionate?
It provides me an opportunity with providing a positive male role model in the lives of guys that don't have it.
Guys that don't have it?
Yeah, the community that I coached in a couple of years ago was an immigrant community, single parent homes, mostly led by women. A lot of times, the guys that were on my team were the oldest male in the house, so a lot of responsibility had been thrust upon them, and as a result, some of them, straight off the straight and narrow. Unless they were provided an opportunity to participate in organized sports, that's where I came in.
It sounds like in a lot of ways these kids are kind of missing out on life.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I was in their spot, so to speak, when I was coming up. I grew up in a house that didn't have a father. In fact, he could walk through those doors right now, and I wouldn't know it was him. That's how early in my life that he left. So I was raised by a mother who had a heart of gold, and she worked very hard, but she couldn't provide me with that male influence that I needed. But by the grace of God, I could have gone elsewhere.
Sounds like you learned how to be pretty self-sufficient at an early age.
I had to. You had to grow up fast. And the things that were out there that snatched me off the streets, figuratively speaking, have been multiplied tenfold now with these guys. So I know that they're either going to wind up dead, they're going to wind up incarcerated, or they're going to wind up like the next Shirley.
Sounds like you really feel for the fact that what they're missing out on really isn't any fault of their own.
It's not. And so for the 2 hours that I get them every day between the months of November and March, it provides me with an opportunity to provide them with some life skills that'll make them better men, because I think as a male adult, it's incumbent upon me to do that. Label or mirror? Label or mirror? I want you to say it looks like, it seems like, it sounds like, and then give me what it looks like, seems like, sounds like. Intuitively, you know what to say. Now I want to make you say it.
It looks like this is really important to
me. Yeah, it is important to me. Let's face it. These guys are going to get their life lessons from somewhere. And if they're not getting it from me, they're going to get it from somebody in the streets. And then the people in the streets are usually going to send them in the wrong direction. Label or mirror?
Mirror. Wrong direction?
Into the mic.
Wrong direction?
Yeah. So I mentioned earlier, they could wind up incarcerated or they could wind up like Shirley. And as an adult, again, my job is to make sure that nobody else becomes a Shirley. Label or mirror?
It sounds like Shirley's important to you. I wasn't following that part. I had a legitimate question. What do you mean when you say Shirley?
I didn't ask you to ask a question. I want you to label or mirror. Any question that you can ask can sound like
Shirley?
A mirror. Great. Yeah, Shirley was a young lady I met. She was 7 years old at the time that I met her. And Shirley was a crack baby, which means when her mother was pregnant, she was continuing to ingest cocaine. Shirley was born addicted to cocaine. And she had the requisite behavioral and cognitive issues that a baby addicted to cocaine would. So she was way behind in her development. They put her into foster care because the mother was not obviously competent to raise the child. So Shirley was put into foster care, and that's when I met her. Label or mirror?
And you met her where?
Not a question. Label or mirror? Any question that you can ask can be turned into a label. So it looks like, it seems like, it sounds like.
Sounds like you had a great opportunity to run into this little girl at one time, and it meant a lot to you.
Subsequently, yeah, it was a great opportunity. At the time, I didn't see it as such. Because when I met her, her foster mother's boyfriend had taken the bottom end of a cane and shoved it in her mouth and broke her teeth out because she spilled toothpaste on the floor. And so when I think about my responsibility to the youth of today, it starts with how I saw Shirley the night that she was on the gurney in the hospital, and I'm taking photographs of her injury. And this little girl that has had everything done to her is laying on the gurney showing me some cigarette burns on her forearm, and she still had enough sunshine in her to smile. And I said, and I still have her picture on my desk with that smile. And I said, if this kid can go through all of that, she needs a fighter. And so my job is to fight for all the Shirleys of the world, label or mirror.
It sounds like you believe this program can really make a difference in children's lives.
Well, it's a leap, but my basketball program, by extension, will lessen the opportunity for kids to fall through the cracks, either into jail or to have their lives impacted in other negative ways. Now, I'm going to stop there. You guys see how much information you can gather by just using labels and mirrors. If you will imagine, the X that I stood on the floor represents, I like coaching basketball, right? How far off of that X did you move me?
Quite a bit.
When I first said I like coaching basketball, figuratively or literally, some of you rolled your eyes and said, oh, another jockhead. Another guy who's going to start talking about the virtues of Steph Curry. Right? But what did you learn about me? Travis said, I grew up without a father. What else did you learn? Specifically, what did you learn?
That you help youth.
That I help youth. Good. What else did you learn?
I have a very big heart.
I have a very big heart. Do I sound like somebody you want to do business with?
Absolutely.
A lot of behavioral things, how you respond to things.
What do you mean?
Given a difficult situation, you took it and turned it into a positive.
Good, good. What else did you learn?
You want to be a road walker, right? You want to give back.
Want to give back. What else did you learn?
Respect your mother.
I respect my mother. What else?
What inspired you?
What inspired me, Monica said. So the point is, you move me off the X, you know a lot about me. Character-wise, behavior-wise. How much information did you give me? How much do I know about you? Nothing. Just using labels and mirrors. That's how strong they work. That's how powerful they are. So, that's what you guys are going to replicate in your one-to-ones.
Who was the talker?
I was the talker.
What was your passion?
Skiing.
Skiing, awesome. Did he label and mirror?
He labeled a lot.
Labeled a lot?
Yep.
Did he mirror?
Yes, once or twice.
Okay, mostly labels, cool.
Mostly labels.
Did he come out of the labels? Did he do anything wrong?
There was one time where I think you said it feels like. That kind of tripped me up in the pattern there. But for the most part, it was pretty solid and, you know, got me off the X, if you will.
How was it for you?
Felt very natural. You know, I didn't feel like anything. I didn't feel like it was artificial.
Awesome. Okay. And all right. So the labeling and mirroring. I don't know how much opportunity you've had to practice up to now. I don't know how many reps you've gotten in. I get a sense from what you were telling me before. You've been applying a book, so you've probably been labeling and mirroring some.
Yeah, that's accurate.
How was the exercise?
It was good. It really felt like a natural flow of a conversation with, you know, somebody tells you something about themselves, and then suddenly he's off and running into way different. It's not about skiing. It's not at all about skiing.
What did it become?
Well, if I go to the deep dive, right, he's trying to develop that camaraderie he developed through skiing that he didn't get from team sports, where he could be individual, but he could be with friends, where he developed lifelong relationships, and now he's at a point in his life where that's once a year. He wants to be able to develop that in a community he lives in.
Okay, now how long were we in the exercise, roughly? 3 minutes, maybe. Now, based on what you just heard about these two gentlemen, this gentleman right here, how many of his core values as a human being and as a businessman do you know? Lifelong relationships, camaraderie, team player, a critical part of his life. You know, so these quickly uncover issues in very short periods of time that drive relationships, which means friendships and business relationships, yes? And, you know, I did a keynote with the Apollo Private Equity Group just a couple of days ago here in town. And they were like, well, can't you still go play golf? So, and I said, all right, so you guys go play golf together for what? To find out what we just found out in the last 3 minutes. Only instead of being on a golf course for 8 hours, it took 3 minutes here. So this is why, and some of you are discovering this already, this is why your professions accelerate. You begin to dial into people very quickly. And you create a great relationship between the two of you, and it takes 3 minutes. Now I got to tell you something, every single time that Brandon and Derek do the exercise in front of the group, I learn more about Derek. And I've known Derek since 2001. Is that when we first met, probably, roughly? And I'm learning more about him every time. Thank goodness Brandon is good at this stuff. Right? So this is how it's applied. And those of you who are still getting your reps in to get over your awkwardness, you heard a gentleman here describe what it was like to be labeled in an environment where he knows he's being labeled in an exercise, in a room, at a seminar. And he said it was natural, it was comfortable, it was fine. If you have any misgivings about these skills at all, this environment should tell you when your counterpart is completely good with it and they know you're using techniques on them. You will never encounter a person that you're talking to that's more aware of the fact that techniques are being deployed on them in the moment and everybody here is okay with it. So it's not that you're using a technique, it's what your objective is, to create a better relationship. Should never be concerned about whether or not they don't like the techniques. If somebody on the other side doesn't like the techniques, it's not because the techniques have shortcomings. It's telling you that there's a pretty good chance this is someone you don't want to do business with. If someone is openly telling you they do not want to collaborate with you, what are they telling you? If I'm communicating to you, I don't want you to know about me. I
don't
want you.
Back here, we had a comment. They don't trust you.
They don't trust you. Yeah. All right, so there's an interesting thing, too. Now, if they don't want you to know these things, now your further diagnosis is uncover what the trust issues are. Now, maybe you're never going to get past it, but that's a great observation. It's a trust issue, and the flip side of that might be that once this person trusts me, they trust so fully and so completely, that's why they're so defensive. So how hard is it going to be to get on the other side of that wall? Now let's dive in. Number one, Black Swan go-to label is, it looks like something just crossed your mind. Number two is, it seems like you're uncomfortable with that. And number three is, it seems like you're hesitant. Now, these are broadly categorized into being used for what scientists would call affect shifts. What's an affect shift? Change in body language, change in tone of voice. Somebody looks down, somebody looks up, somebody looks to the side. Affect shifts. Now, the tricky thing about this is, you don't know for sure what their change in body language actually means. Like, they could be lying, they could be uncomfortable because they've given you the best deal they already could. There's a whole variety of reasons. What you want to do is find out what's behind the change in the affect shift, the change in the body language, the change in the tone of voice. It's pretty much like finding out what's behind the question. Before you proceed, you want to make sure that you know. So the first three labels are for changes in affect shifts. Number four, it seems like you have a reason for saying that. Or you could give it seems like you have a reason for saying that. Notice the two different changes in inflection, two completely different impacts, two different ways to do the same thing. Number five, very similar label. But instead of for saying that, we're going to focus on their action. It seems like you have a reason for, and then you label the action, doing that. It seems like you have a reason for doing that. We had a contractor one time talking to a subcontractor, says, seems like you have a reason for not finishing the work. Subcontractor didn't finish the work, needs to find out what's going on behind not finishing the work, and so he just hangs a label on the action. Seems like you have a reason for not finishing the work. Now, interestingly enough, any one of these could be mislabels. Mislabels are fine. What did the contractor say when he did what did the subcontractor say when he ended up doing the label, which he was just doing it genuinely? He said, no, really, I don't. That's one of the magic things about labels. Mislabels can give you more information than maybe the label could have in the first place. So this broad category here, second category, for our next couple labels we just did was labeling behavior or statements that you're uncertain of or even that you think might be wrong. So here's what I want you to do so you can reach your full potential as a negotiator. First, go to our website, blackswanltd.com. Now, look over here, put your cursor on resources. Put it there, highlight it, go to free ebooks and guides. We're now in resources. Scroll down. You can see 5 negotiation tactics for dealing with difficult people. Download it now. Click on that. Here's a description of what you get with this guide, and it's free. So, yeah, we want your email. We want you to reach your full potential. Put in your first name, your last name, your email address, and click on the stuff that you think is how you can advance, how you're going to get better. You'll be glad you did. Now, back to our video. Now, number 6. is a great label to use at impasse, or when you're at loggerheads, or when you can't get past where the two of you are. And you don't want to make a concession. You shouldn't make concessions. Don't make concessions. Never split the difference. So here's a label to use when you're at impasse. It sounds like there's nothing I can say to get you to change your mind. Or it sounds like there's nothing I could say to get you to change your mind. Now, this came up in a negotiation. Wasn't the first label that the person using it used. He'd been labeling for a while. He'd been very interactive. He'd been building rapport, been using tactical empathy. So, of course, situation drives strategy. You're at the end of a negotiation. You're at an impasse after you've made a great deal of really good effort to try to make the deal work. Last-ditch effort to snatch victory from the jaws of defeat. If you've approached with tactical empathy the entire way, it seems like there's nothing I can say to get you to change your mind. What happened in this negotiation? Since it was a genuine effort the entire way, the person on the other side said, "No, as a matter of fact, here's what I want," and laid it out, and they made the deal. Next, here's a ridiculous one that black swans on our team are using on a regular basis. Very counterintuitive. It's at the opening when someone says to you, "How are you today?" Of course, it's in a business conversation. They've called you, and they've called you, and they said, "How are you today?" Here's what the super sharp black swans are saying in return. "It sounds like you have a place you want to start." That's crazy, right? Yeah. But if they called you, they got a place they want to start. And how are you today is really the check in to see whether or not you're prepared to start where they want to start. They put preparation into this conversation. So this really cuts to the chase. Two-thirds of the time, actually more than that, the other person is relieved and they jump right into it. You've built rapport, you've jumped to the heart of the matter, they're relieved, you saved a massive amount of time. Now, every now and then, somebody really cares how you are today. They care in general. And when they do, they're going to say, "All right, we'll get to that." They're going to be nice and friendly about it. "But how are you today?" Because they really want to know. Then you can exchange those pleasantries. Most of the time, the exchange of pleasantries is just to see if you're ready to get down to business. You can get down to business and be friendly and build rapport all at once. And this is a great way to do that. So that was number 7. Sounds like you have a place you want to start. Next category for when they say the price is too high. This is our number eight go-to label. "It seems like the value's just not there for you." Or, "It seems like the value's just not there for you." Notice the first one was a downward declarative, downward declaring tone of voice. And the second one was the upward inquisitive, genuinely curious tone of voice. Same words, land completely differently. Feel free to experiment with both. Look, if the price is not right for them, it ain't about price. It's about what they're getting for the price. Don't cut your price. Pivot into the value conversation. Find out what's going on the other side. Use the label. If it's an effective label, if it's accurate, they're going to tell you that it is. If it's a mislabel, then they're just going to test your price. They're going to pivot back, and you're going to know that too. Either way, you shouldn't be cutting your price. You should be making the deal better. That's one of the ways the black swans do this stuff. Next category. Labels for what we refer to as proof of life. What's proof of life? Is there a deal, and is the deal with you? Those are two tricky issues. Number one, they could be doing due diligence. They're not going to give you the deal. Number two, they could be looking for free consulting. They're not going to do the deal. Number three, you're the rabbit. They're looking for you to drive the price down on the favorite. You're the fool in the game. If you don't know who the fool in the game is, it's probably you. How do you deal with this? Proof of life. Is there a deal, and is a deal with you? We got two great labels for you to use here. This first one, number 9, is kind of a tricky, different way to tee up your label. Instead of it sounds like, it's going to be, it doesn't seem, or it doesn't sound. It doesn't sound. Notice a difference in the beginning. So, number 9. It doesn't seem like you're ready to make a commitment. Or, it doesn't seem like you're ready to make a commitment to us. Could be done with an upward inflection. It doesn't seem like you're ready to make a commitment to us. It doesn't seem like you're ready to make a commitment. Again, downward and upward inflection. You get a lot of fake negotiations. There's a fair amount of data out there that says that 20% of your opportunities are fake opportunities. Since we've been teaching proof of life to people in a black swan method, we found that the numbers are typically much higher than 20%, may go up as high as 80%. You got to feel it out a little bit. This is an effective label. This is appropriate. You should be prepared to use this label in the first half hour of the first conversation. If you're gaining a sense, based on our methodology and teaching, that you might be the fool in the game. This is completely appropriate to do that. And that was number 9. Now, get ready for number 10. Number 10 is, it seems like you're still shopping around. Or, it seems like you're still shopping around. Again, I gave it to you with both of the inflections. And this is one of the values of our YouTube videos. Again, these are appropriate if you're sensing that there's a proof of life issue in the deal. And if they're mislabels and they're not still shopping around or they're not ready to make a commitment, people love mislabels because it gives them a chance to jump in and correct. No. We're ready to make a commitment. No. We're not shopping around. Mislabels are great at uncovering the truth, because when you mislabel, the urge to correct is overwhelming. It's one of our laws of negotiation gravity. So don't be afraid to mislabel. Now, of course, you're not doing it on purpose. Actually, sometimes people do mislabel on purpose. But there's no problem with mislabeling as long as you're trying to get it right. All right. That was our list of top 10 go-to Black Swan Method labels. This video is about labels, the ultimate negotiation tool. Sometimes we think of it as the ultimate MacGyver tool. What makes it a MacGyver tool? Well, a MacGyver tool is really simple and incredibly effective, ridiculously effective. To do your labels right, you got to keep them simple. Stick to the format. It seems like, it sounds like, it looks like. You seem, you sound, you look. We have a great negotiator that loves to say it feels like. Stick to that simple format. We're intentionally leaving the word I out. I is a thought interrupter, a pattern interrupter. When you use the word I, it draws attention to yourself. It interrupts the other side's thinking. And you're using labels to gather information. We know from negotiation that you add this to gather information. The crazy thing is, asking questions is not always the best way to gather information. Labels work well more of the time than asking questions do. Labels trigger stream of consciousness reactions. You might say to somebody, "What are you thinking about this?" You might label them instead and say, "Seems like you're giving this a lot of thought." Or, "It seems like you're thinking about something here." Or, "It seems like you saw some things you like." Either one of those is going to trigger a much more unvarnished flow of thoughts from the other side. One of the people who's really learned this stuff and is doing a great job of applying this in the real estate area calls it unlocking the floodgates of truth talk. Happens to be a woman that's applying this and seeing the insights, and not the least bit surprising because women have a tendency to pick this stuff up faster than men do. That doesn't mean men can't be great at it also, just that for whatever reason, women seem to get a head start on understanding this and applying it really quickly. This is emotional intelligence-based negotiation. One of the crazy things about this is that when Brandon and I brought these hostage negotiation techniques out of hostage negotiation into the business world, we didn't think labels were that big of a deal. I can tell you now that we both use them so much that we can work our way entirely through a negotiation only using labels. When you get good at them, you respect their simplicity, and you apply them, you can use them all over the place. One of the main things that makes labels incredibly versatile is the fact that all three types like them a lot. We've done a lot of polling. We've got a lot of reason to believe that the world pretty much breaks up into three types: assertives, analysts, and accommodators, across the board, regardless of gender or ethnicity. We probably polled at least 2,000 people in this regard. We've got a fair amount of data. And in polling all these people, and in different classes we've taught, we frequently run exercises where we ask them, of the 9 negotiation skills, which skills would you most prefer your counterpart use with you in order to make a great deal with you? All three types pick labels as number 1 or number 2. So while you're still trying to get a feel for the other side and draw a bead on what type they are, labels will always be your highest percentage shot at the very beginning when you're proceeding. And then if you find out that they resonate really well with labels, you just simply stick to them. It's your safest bet, and the way you go from being barely good enough to get by to being a superstar is just by increasing your odds a little bit at a time. Labels increase your odds. Get good at them, practice them simply, practice every day, get your reps in, and they will serve you well. How much practice should you get in? 1 hour a day. Make 1 hour label hour. Label at noon. Label over lunch. Label from 7 to 8 every day, whatever time it is. Get your practice in. Make a cheat sheet of labels. Keep it by your phone. Your cheat sheet should especially include labels of negative dynamics. Fill in a blank. It seems like you hate X. It seems like you dislike X. It seems like X is a problem for you. Have those fill in a blank labels by your phone. Have them ready. They will serve you well.
All right. Lay it on me. What do you got?
All right. So ghosting is a problem, but I think one of the worst problems, especially whether it's sales or deal making, which is what I'm in, stay in touch, right? The prospect, the other party, they want you to stay in touch. You don't stay in touch enough, you become forgotten. If you stay in touch too closely, you are annoying. Any suggestions on tactfully or tactically staying in touch and making sure you're moving the needle with them?
Yeah, so their last words to you is stay in touch. What's the prompt here?
Yeah, usually it's this question I get asked a lot. So it's usually we're in long sales cycles, pretty complex deals. They tend to like you, whatever, but they're not ready to move forward with the negotiation, the deal, the contract, or whatever. Stay in touch. They're not saying no, which I'd rather they ghost or say no because then we can move on, but stay in touch. So what would be, you know, a couple of ideas you might think of how to stay in touch? You know, that's
No. Let's rethink this. First of all, that's the same as a maybe, and you got to treat maybes as if they're no's. So that's mm-hmm. where you got to proceed. After saying stay in touch, it's either flat no, they're not going to do it, or they have misgivings that you're not revealing. Mm-hmm. So you know that to be true. Like, are you keeping your percentages, your win rate percentage, your length of time to an outcome, and your percentage of successes on your stay in touches?
A percentage of stay in touches to success, yes. We call it more of a pull-through yield, meaning deals we put in the pipeline to success ratio, it's really high. It's about 85%.
But this is more the... You answered my question. Hold on.
Yeah.
Stay in touch as a category only. you can tell me what percentage of the stay in touch people, let's call them a zebra or a giraffe or a thoroughbred. I don't care. Mm-hmm. They're one profile. Mm-hmm. Stay in touch. Can you tell me what percentage of those close and how long it takes to close? Yes or no?
Yes, I could. I could. Yes, I could. Yes.
Okay. So can you, so first of all, it's not a sin to not get the deal. It's a sin to take a long time to not get the deal.
Correct.
So if they're saying stay in touch, what do you know to be true?
That they're not saying no. They're somewhat amenable to terms, but whether it's timing or pressure or something on their side that's not motivating them to be enough to turn the dial to let's sign the retainer.
All right, so they have misgivings or they lack pressure or they don't see the immediate value. Nobody Correct. Says stay in touch on something that they see immediate value to.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right? Otherwise, they'd execute. Sure. Either if they see immediate value to it or if they have pressure to execute, they'd execute.
Mm-hmm.
So
good point.
The response is going to be a label. Stay in touch. Sounds like you have misgivings.
It's a good point.
Stay in touch. Sounds like there are other things that are pressuring you. Now, they're going to be much more likely to talk with you about the barriers than they are to talk about what's going to hook them.
Mm-hmm.
Because people are comfortable talking about what's getting in the way because they don't feel there's a commitment involved. So they're free. I'm free to tell you what the barriers are. It's up to you to solve them. If you want to say, well, what would it take to make this deal? I don't want to say that because it's going to back me into a corner.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to focus on the barriers instead. And you probably want to go after that with labels. So I would never, you know, and I got to tell you something. Nobody in my business development team goes into stay in touch mode. And a lot of what we've learned will be inspired by similar to Jim Camp, Start With No, 2002 book. I work with Jim. We collaborated over a lot of stuff. Me and his sons, Jim has since deceased. Their whole approach was to get somebody to make a decision, yes mm-hmm. or no. But every conversation was designed to make a decision, and stay in touch is to avoid decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a maybe, and it's never, never land, and you cannot monetize maybe. To some degree, you can monetize, we're not making this deal, because then you can move on. So mm-hmm. I would never go into stay in touch mode. If I get stay in touch, what do you know to be true? You know they don't see the value right now. You know they're being pressured in other areas. You know they have misgivings. You know those things to be true.
Mm-hmm.
Throw it out with a label. Focus in on that. They're going to be much more likely to talk with you.
I like the take on that. Very good. I love it. Thank you. You're a rock star, man, but you know.
That was a great question. Thank you very much for the question.
Thank you. Pleasure.
The labels. So labels have a very specific structure. You're going to be saying, it seems like, it sounds like, it looks like, it feels like. You can use it or you can use you. It is neutral. It's where you should probably stay when you're starting to use the skills because it is neutral. You can use you and it's definitely more engaging, but if you're not really very careful about the tone of voice that you have, using you cannot go very well for you if you're not careful. So you can say, it seems like you're angry, or you can say, you seem angry. The you that I just said was very accusatory. People don't respond well to that. So it's better if you just stick with it in the beginning until you're dealing with somebody who you know for sure feels a certain way, and you can say it without that little sarcastic kind of accusatory tone in your voice. Now, when you're using labels, actually, I don't know why we just have this on the label slide because it's using any of our skills. Do not use the word but after you say something because it is an erasing word. So everything you say after the word but erases everything you said before it. So if you say, you know, you seem angry, but you really don't need to be. You just erase that perfectly good label. by saying the word but. If you use the words and or because, you're actually either explaining the label or you're stepping on it. So what you need to do instead of actually putting one of those words in there after you use a really good label or even after a mirror, you want to just go quiet, okay? Let the person process what you just said. Don't erase it or explain it right away. One thing I want you to remember through this process is if you are explaining, you're losing. Okay, so when you use our skills, you don't want to explain them. You want to like drop them. It's like dropping the mic. You just put it out there and let it sit. Okay. So what exactly are labels? So labels are essentially verbal observations. They are whatever you're seeing or picking up from the other side. So it could be their motivations, the circumstances that they're in, the dynamics of the situation that you're both involved in. It could be their emotions. It's you interpreting. So when you're using a label, you can do what we call a surface label, which is what's presenting. In other words, usually what's presenting when you're dealing with someone else is whatever emotion that they're feeling. Because a lot of times you can see it in their body language. You can see it or feel it in what they're saying. So if you label that surface element, it's not a bad thing to do. But it's better if you can use a deeper label, which is trying to maybe get to the why behind the behavior. So say you have a friend who is arguing with their spouse. And so when you start talking to them, you say, it seems like you hate arguing with your spouse. And then their thought is, well, yeah, of course I hate arguing with my spouse. Who doesn't hate arguing with their spouse? That was a dumb thing to say. Instead of going for that surface label, which is not horrible, go for a deeper label and say something like, it seems like you get irritated when you and your spouse don't see eye to eye. It's just a little bit deeper. It doesn't take much, just a slight shift to get you from the very surface, you hate arguing with your spouse, to the deeper kind of why behind it. Seems like you get irritated when you and your spouse don't see eye to eye. Okay. You can label negatives or you can label positives. If you label negatives, it actually diffuses them. Shh, I got off, Mochi. If you notice something negative that's happening in the room and you ignore it, it's like not pointing out the elephant that's right there that everybody knows is there, but no one's saying anything about it. And if you leave it there, it just tramples around everything. If you point it out, if you just go ahead and say, there's that elephant in the room, you're going to actually diffuse it. You're going to mitigate it. You're going to take away its power. So labeling the negative is not a bad thing. I mean, you can talk about someone's emotion as being negative. You know, wow, it really seems like you're angry. And if the anger is something that's kind of clouding what's going on with you and your conversation and you see that, you can label that. It actually just points it out, gets that negative out there and actually then diffuses it. One of the reasons it works so well is because you're demonstrating an understanding of the other side. Okay, you're letting them know that you see this negative thing and then you're helping them kind of diffuse it. You can label positives and that actually reinforces them. And this kind of goes along with neuroscience, basically. If I'm dealing with my daughter and she goes out with her friends and she comes home and I realize that she's in a really, really good mood, I'm going to label that. I'm going to say, seems like you had a really good time with your friends. And what happens when I say that is she goes back to that point in time where she was out with her friends and she was having a really good time. And it releases endorphins and gives her this little sense of euphoria. So it's reinforcing that positive time that she had. And it's bringing up all these nice positive things. So when you're labeling that positive thing, it's actually reinforcing it.
Guys, we're talking about mirrors today. Jedi mind trick. The last 1 to 3 words are the important 1 to 3 words. Listen to these examples to see how crazy it is that this stuff works. The quickest, easiest, simple bailout skill that will never fail you, never, 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 never fail you. Especially when you're thrown off, when you're off track, when you've lost your emotional bearing. Mirrors are there for you. They work with the least amount of brain power. That's why they're always there for you. So we're preparing for one of these trainings in a very early day. No, it wasn't one of these trainings, but it was our training in our very early days.
Yeah, corporate training.
And we're supposed to put together notebooks. Actually, we're supposed to put together three-ring binders. But in my head, those terms are synonymous. And he's putting this stuff together. And I ask him if he's got the notebooks ready. And he knows we're supposed to be putting three-ring binders, and I'm saying notebooks. He doesn't know what's in my head, actually. You know, are you thinking something like this when I say notebooks? You know, yeah, who knows? Basically. But, you know, this could be this is not a three-ring binder, is it? This is not a three-ring binder. I don't know. I don't know what's the matter with him. I don't know why he can't read my mind. But anyway, so I say, are the notebooks ready? And he goes, what do you mean by notebooks? So what do I say?
Goddamn notebooks.
Yeah, exactly. Goddamn notebooks, right? You say it's much clearer then, right? Because the word notebook is so self-explanatory that if you don't understand exactly what I mean because I choose my words so well, then you're an idiot. It's the same way I ask for directions when I'm in Paris. What do you mean you don't know where the Eiffel Tower? Where's the Eiffel Tower? You know, I only say it again louder. So he mirrors me. He goes, notebooks? I go, yeah, three-ring binders. And you know, that's why the mirrors are the great bail you out of the corner tool. Somebody's not on the right on the same sheet of music. It's either you or it's them. A quick mirror always causes, always causes people to restate it another way. It's especially effective with assertives, because we figure if you're unclear, we just need to talk more.
This is Chris again. Hey, listen, I got a couple of questions I need to ask you. We've got a van out here, a blue and gray van. We've been able to get a handle on the owners of all the vehicles out here except this one in particular. Do you know anything about it?
Well, are the vehicles not out there because you guys chased my driver away?
We chased your driver away?
Well, when he seen the police, he cut.
This mirror tool, one of the negotiation techniques, you know, from the FBI 8, you know, there are 8 specific techniques that we used in hostage negotiation. The mirror tool is one of those ways to innocuously get them to either repeat it or expand on it.
Get them to either repeat it or expand on it?
Right.
Is that what you just said?
Right.
Did I just do it?
You know what? You did. It was perfect.
Okay.
See, and I didn't even notice it. I was just telling you to use it.
That's pretty cool.
I don't know if you felt awkward when you did that because you did it intentionally, but I had no idea that you did it until you told me you did it.
Wow. It was awkward. It was definitely awkward. It felt, you know, contrived. But you didn't pick it. You didn't feel that at all.
No. I mean, you blew that one by me. You blew it right by me.
I hope you got the idea. Mirrors are simple. The last 1 to 3 words are the important 1 to 3 words. Make a whole day a mirror day. They're easy. Practice them. Get your repetitions in. They're simple. They're a Jedi mind trick. Enjoy using mirrors.
So labels have a very specific structure. You're going to be saying, it seems like, it sounds like, it looks like, it feels like. You can use it or you can use you. It is neutral. It's where you should probably stay when you're starting to use the skills because it is neutral. You can use you and it's definitely more engaging, but if you're not really very careful about the tone of voice that you have, using you cannot go very well for you if you're not careful. So you can say, it seems like you're angry, or you can say, you seem angry. The you that I just said was very accusatory. People don't respond well to that. So it's better if you just stick with it in the beginning until you're dealing with somebody who you know for sure feels a certain way, and you can say it without that little sarcastic kind of accusatory tone in your voice. Now, when you're using labels, actually, I don't know why we just have this on the label slide because it's using any of our skills. Do not use the word but after you say something because it is an erasing word. So everything you say after the word but erases everything you said before it. So if you say, you know, you seem angry, but you really don't need to be. You just erase that perfectly good label by saying the word but. If you use the words and or because, you're actually either explaining the label or you're stepping on it. So what you need to do instead of actually putting one of those words in there after you use a really good label or even after a mirror, you want to just go quiet, okay? Let the person process what you just said. Don't erase it or explain it right away. One thing I want you to remember through this process is if you are explaining, you're losing. Okay, so when you use our skills, you don't want to explain them. You want to like drop them. It's like dropping the mic. You just put it out there and let it sit.
Right on. Thank you, Chris, for everything. This is fantastic. My question, you know, going back to what you were discussing earlier about shooting somebody a message, you know, with mirroring, and because so much is about body language and inflection. So just in the use of like a sponsorship package. So you've had a meeting with somebody. They said, you know, you left us, we're going to follow up. He's like, you know, I got to take it back to my team. You follow up a couple weeks later, say, hey, no response. And then you like shoot him a text or you shoot him an email and say, it's like, are you no longer interested in the sponsorship? And, you know, one, does that come across sounding desperate when there's no inflection or just out of the blue? And then part two is if they respond and with a simple, no, we feel the price is too high. Now, if you and I were saying this in person, you're like, hey, the price is a little too high. I might come back with, well, too high. So when it comes to the type of communications through text and email, you don't have the inflection, and I don't want, you know, how not to sound like a parrot, I guess.
Right.
Would be the question.
All right. So whether or not you sound like a parrot is really more about you. It's not about you. Mm-hmm. Now, you do have a bit of an instinct here for that texting. Occasionally, you know, you can't control tone. Mm-hmm. So, we got something we call softeners, which principally softener, most of the time is usually, I'm sorry, I'm afraid. So where I'd mirror that, I might say, I'm sorry, dot, 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 too high, question mark. That's throwing a little bit of a softener in the beginning.
This also comes from me. I mean, I'm now doing more sales for our events, and you know, I've always said I'm not a salesperson. Well, I had to change my philosophy and say I am a salesperson. So you know, I've been checking out the masterclass, and it was fantastic taking my notes, and then coming to this, I just feel, and this is me, but I feel it's like if I just wrote I'm afraid dot 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 too high, it's like that is so outside my comfort zone that I'm like. Just going right back, it's like too high. Like, how dare you question our pricing structure in that sense?
And well, your amygdala is whispering in your ear. You know, anytime anything that's new to you, until you've got your own personal data. As human beings, we're in survival mode as our default mode, and our default mode is our amygdala, which is 75% negative. So something that's new that catches you off guard, that amygdala is going to whisper in your ear. It's an amygdala whisper. And you got to get some experiential data on your own to counter that. Now, look, I got my amygdala whispers in my ear. So, because I'm human. So get some experiential data on your mirrors in other places. I will tell you also, very much like the conversation we just had, you know, we'll get back to you. First of all, learn to recognize what is a maybe. That's a maybe. You know, the choosing not to execute now. Now, let's couple this with people's gut response is to question price. And rarely is it the price. Mm-hmm. It's the value. Or it's really the value. So somebody says your price is too high. Your response to that is, it seems like the value is just not there for you.
There we go.
Because they may, you know, the gut reaction, you got to get them, they may not know what's wrong until you encourage them out of it with the appropriate label. Their gut instinct might be telling them they may, so you need to articulate exactly what it is. Now, Now, there's a possibility that their counterproposal on adjustment on the value was delivery terms, anything other than price, might actually make it more profitable for you. Now, it doesn't matter what percentage of time that is. Maybe it's only 1% of the time. Mm-hmm. Let's say it's only 1% of the time.
That's better than 0% of the time.
It's better than zero. That's money you're leaving on the table. You know, you got to give them the opportunity to counter-propose a deal that actually makes more money for you. And then, on top of that, if you get them to counter-propose a better deal, you go, wow, brilliant. And then what are the chances that they're going to follow up? Because it was their idea that darn Skippy they're going to follow up. It was their idea. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that would be my cascade of advice for you on that. And I know eventually, like, this will be out in a video. It'll be linked to our bios. Mm-hmm. You guys want to go back and review this because, you know, the stream of consciousness that you're getting from me or any of the Black Swans is almost too fast to keep up with. So, you know, go back and review the videos. Take as many notes, max out the value on this app.
Right on. Thank you. So in closing, bend a little reality.
Who told you how to do that? Where did you get that idea?
I don't know.
Brandon.
Yes.
There's a question in the chat. How do we deal with assertives when we know we can't give them what they want up front?
Great, great question. So, first of all, the number one tool to use on an assertive is going to be a mirror. We talk about rapport and info gathering in the last session. We will go over mirrors then. Why is that good? Assertives have a tendency to talk a lot. They have a tendency to browbeat you with their point of view. They don't like to be interrupted, and it's very counterproductive. Mirroring helps them connect their thoughts together, lets them know you're tracking the whole time, and gives the implication or the understanding that you get it without having to do a full summary or without having to say the words, I get it, or I understand, or please go on. What do you mean by that? You can use the mirror. So first of all, you have to have mirrored them a bunch. The other part of this is, not every negotiation should be turned into a deal. Part of any negotiation is essentially a qualification process. Should I be doing business with you? We talk about in the book, all of you have seen this. No deal is always better than a bad deal. No deal allows you to free up your time and attack the next great opportunity that's actually going to help you. A bad deal will put you through 3 to 5, sometimes I feel bad for some of these people in the corporate world, 10, 12 years of heartache and pain. I got a client right now trying to break loose from, I won't name the company, but wanted to get in bed with them because they are who they are. They have had a year of heartache. And all we talk about in our coaching sessions is how to amicably sever that relationship because they have performance things they got to get done. There's demands that need to be met, and they can't stand dealing with these MFers anymore. And so if you can't give them what they want, maybe that's a good thing. And so not every deal should be made. When dealing with an assertive, mirror, get a that's, you hit the nail on the head before you start laying out demands in the form of I messages or potentially thought-shaping questions. So, caviar, you're probably wondering why that's up there. It's an acronym that we have that is really centered on mindset. I'll give you the quick rundown of what it stands for. Curiosity, accept, vent, identify, accusations, audit, and then remember. The two I want to focus on is the I and the R. I has to do with identify. Your mindset should be, as I'm navigating information and managing emotions, I need to identify their type. I'm going to start with their tone first to help me figure it out.
With a mirror, you're repeating back the last 1 to 3 words. You want to be careful, not go more than 5, because if you're getting up there in numbers, you're looking more at a paraphrase. And it's no longer a mirror. So it can be from anywhere in the conversation, but this does take practice. If you're listening to someone and they're going on for, you know, 3-4 sentences and you hear something that you want more information about, you mirror that specific thing. Okay. It's not an issue. It doesn't break someone's train of thought because they already brought it up. So they already have it in their mind. What you're doing is if they're giving you 3 or 4 different issues and there's one particular one you want to talk about, you go that direction with your mirror. And that's a way that you can kind of control the conversation and get the information that you want. You want to use labels and mirrors and get as much information as possible from the other side while giving as little information as possible away about yourself. That's the best way to practice. It's also not mirroring body language. Now, I don't discount any body language. It has its place. And I'm pretty sure Troy's going to bring up my coffee drinking here in a second. But if someone that you're talking to rubs their nose like this, a lot of times you'll rub your nose because somewhere in your brain says, why are they rubbing their nose? Do I have something on my face? Or they'll do something with their ear. So you'll do something with your ear. A lot of times it's unconscious. Okay. It's a very unconscious thing that people do. But we're not really talking about mirroring body language because in the world that we came from, we were on the phone with people. So we weren't able to really see body language. So it's not that we don't put any stock in body language. It can be extremely important. It's just not the most important thing. And we're not talking about mirroring body language. So we're not telling you if someone crosses their arms, you cross their arms, you cross your arms. We're not telling you to mirror that body language. It can be kind of fun to kind of mess with it though, because a lot of times if you do something, people will see it and they'll do it also.
Guys, we're talking about mirrors today. Jedi mind trick. The last 1 to 3 words are the important 1 to 3 words. Listen to these examples to see how crazy it is that this stuff works. The quickest, easiest, simple bailout skill that will never fail you, never, 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 never fail you. Especially when you're thrown off, when you're off track, when you've lost your emotional bearing. Mirrors are there for you. They work with the least amount of brain power. That's why they're always there for you. So we're preparing for one of these trainings in a very early day. No, it wasn't one of these trainings, but it was our training in our very early days.
Yeah, corporate training.
And we're supposed to put together notebooks. Actually, we're supposed to put together 3-ring binders. But in my head, those terms are synonymous. And he's putting the stuff together. And I ask him if he's got the notebooks ready. And he knows we're supposed to be putting 3-ring binders. And I'm saying notebooks. He doesn't know what's in my head, actually. You know, are you thinking something like this when I say notebooks? You know, yeah, who knows? Basically. But, you know, this could be this is not a 3-ring binder, is it? This is not a 3-ring binder. I don't know. I don't know what's the matter with him. I don't know why he can't read my mind. But anyway, so I say, are the notebooks ready? And he goes, what do you mean by notebooks? So what do I say?
Goddamn notebooks.
Yeah, exactly. Goddamn notebooks, right? You say it's much clearer then, right? Because the word notebook is so self-explanatory that if you don't understand exactly what I mean because I choose my words so well, then you're an idiot. It's the same way I ask for directions when I'm in Paris. What do you mean you don't know where the Eiffel Tower? Where's the Eiffel Tower? You know, I only say it again louder. So he mirrors me. He goes, notebooks? I go, yeah, 3-ring binders. And you know, that's why the mirrors are the great bail you out of the corner tool. Somebody's not on the same sheet of music. It's either you or it's them. A quick mirror always causes people to restate it another way. It's especially effective with assertives because we figure if you're unclear, we just need to talk more.
This is Chris again. Hey, listen, I got a couple of questions I need to ask you. We've got a van out here, a blue and gray van. We've been able to get a handle on the owners of all the vehicles out here except this one in particular. Do you know anything about it?
Well, are the vehicles not out there because you guys chased my driver away?
We chased your driver away?
Well, when he seen the police, he cut.
This mirror tool, one of the negotiation techniques, you know, from the FBI 8, you know, there are 8 specific techniques that we used in hostage negotiation. The mirror tool is one of those ways to innocuously get them to either repeat it or expand on it.
Get them to either repeat it or expand on it?
Right.
Is that what you just said?
Right.
Did I just do it?
You know what? You did. It was perfect.
Okay.
See, and I didn't even notice it. I was just telling you to use it.
That's pretty cool.
I don't know if you felt awkward when you did that because you did it intentionally, but I had no idea that you did it until you told me you did it.
Wow. It was awkward. It was definitely awkward. It felt, you know, contrived. But you didn't pick it. You didn't feel that at all.
No. I mean, you blew that one by me. You blew it right by me.
I hope you got the idea. Mirrors are simple. The last 1 to 3 words are the important 1 to 3 words. Make a whole day a mirror day. They're easy. Practice them. Get your repetitions in. They're simple. They're a Jedi mind trick. Enjoy using mirrors.
Doesn't matter sort of what your starting point is. You can create influence with anybody on the planet if you're able to really dig in and understand what they want, what they're feeling and thinking emotionally, and what drives them.
Yeah, you know, and it's important to draw the distinction that understanding is not agreement. Now that scares some people. It scares a lot of people. You know, I can understand Bernie Sanders supporters. I can understand Donald Trump supporters. I can understand Hillary Clinton supporters. I can understand all of them. And as soon as I know where they're coming from, it gives me an opportunity to adjust where they're going.
You touched on this concept a moment ago, the idea of, and maybe it's a little bit different, but the idea of mirroring. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. You know, a mirror is, and it's not the mirror that everybody else thinks of. Most people see mirroring as, let me mirror their body language. You know, let me stand like they stand. If they got their chin in their right hand, you know, let me put my right hand to my chin. If they're leaning against the wall, let me lean against the wall. The mirroring of the physical body language, that's not it. It's simpler and it's actually more powerful. The mirroring a hostage negotiator does, what the difference is, the mirroring is just the repetition of the last 1 to 3 words that someone has said. The last 1 to 3 words that someone has said? Exactly. Just exactly like that. And it's a great simple tool that feels enormously awkward when you do it. When I'm training people, I have them do it right away because the biggest barrier to these skills is not their complexity or their intellectual challenge of understanding them. The barrier here is feeling awkward because it's different. You feel awkward, the other person feels listened to. A mirror triggers, you know, punches a button in somebody else's mind. It's like, reword what you just said and go on. It's almost a command. It's the closest thing that a lot of people that I train this say, wow, this is a Jedi mind trick. A Jedi mind trick? It's a Jedi mind trick because people love it and they want to go on. I once, and it was a funny story, it made me look funny, and that's why I included it in the book. I had an employee that was mirroring me for 45 minutes once. I didn't even know it. My son was sitting there and finally he couldn't take it anymore. He goes, stop it. Don't you see what he's doing to you? And I was like, no, what, you know, what's he doing? He's been mirroring you for the last 45 minutes. You didn't even know it. You just enjoyed talking so much. He kept you going.
So it's really just as simple as repeating back the last 3 or 4 words that they said?
You know, you pick out 1 to 3 words. And the other problem it solves also is, like most of us, when we say what we mean, we often use very words that are very carefully selected for our own brain. And we know what we mean by that. But there's a pretty good chance, actually, it isn't exactly the way the other person is thinking. And your perfect words are kind of missing the mark. And if somebody says, what do you mean by that? We're most likely to repeat the exact same words, only louder. It's like an American trying to be understood in France. I just say it again and only louder. What a mirror does, it flips that switch so the person will repeat what they've said in different words. It's how you get someone to paraphrase themselves is what it really does. It triggers a paraphrasing. You don't have to paraphrase for them. You let them paraphrase. And you're going to increase your meaning. The other thing you're going to do, you mentioned moments before, it buys moments for you in the conversation so you get more time to think. And the other thing that mirroring does, I've got a client of mine who's one of the smartest people I've ever met. He mirrors the other side's negotiation position, so key words in it every time, because he knows how they respond, tells them whether or not they're firm or whether or not they're open for conversation.
And when you get someone to paraphrase themselves, it gives you a real clear idea of the firmness of their position.
So the idea of buying moments in a conversation, I know you've talked about the importance of listening, and I want to dig into that, but also the idea that if you're focused on only on explaining yourself and explaining your arguments, it's really, really hard to kind of step back and understand what the other side is saying.
Right. Yeah. Good point. And you need these moments because some people have described the art of negotiation as letting the other side have your way. Well, how do you let the other side have your way? You got to get the other guy talking, which means you have to be quiet and you have to keep them talking. Winning in a negotiation is not beating the other side, because when you beat the other side, actually you leave resentment planted in them and they want to pay you back if they feel beaten. And what's going to happen is it's going to erode your implementation. And as a human being or as a company, revenue is realized when it comes in, not when it's promised, which means you don't make your profit when the deal is signed. You make your profit as the deal is implemented, even if it's an agreement between a husband and a wife. You know, you both realize value as you carry out what you agreed to. And people who feel beaten aren't going to want to implement. They're not going to want to let you realize the revenue, or again, they're going to hurt you when they can by doing nothing. So you buy these moments, so you let the other side talk, that you find out what's possible. Never be so sure of what you want that you wouldn't take something better. You got to hear from the other side what those better things might be. And then when they came up with a great idea that you didn't think of, you know, you look on them and you congratulate them for how smart they are, and then they're going to implement. You're both going to like it and you're both going to be better off. And so you got to let the other side go first in order to get there.
So going back a little bit to talk about more about how we can be better listeners, tell me about the concept of active listening and how can we cultivate that?
It's not just active, but it's proactive. So the first and simplest way to cultivate it is to shut the front door, is to, you know, go silent. And, you know, we talk about moments. What's a moment? A moment is 3 seconds. Give the other guy a chance to speak. And then actually try to paraphrase what he said or ask a clarifying question. There's great power in clarity when you're trying to pull clarity out of the other side. Paraphrase what they've said. Mirror the last 3 words of what they just said to get them to paraphrase. You're designing a communication process that draws the other side out, which the other thing you want the other side to do is you want them to show you their hidden cards. In every conversation, in every negotiation, there are things that we're holding close to the vest. It's really important to us. That's why we're holding them close to the vest. There are hidden cards, if you will, our proprietary information, our secret information. That happens every time. If you're holding cards, so are they. And where the real magic lies is where those cards overlap. So you've got to get the other side to trust you enough. By listening, what we used to call active listening, which is not just sitting there with your mouth shut and glaring at them intensely, but it's asking them a good question, asking them what or how. The two biggest great questions start with the words what or how, or trying to draw them out with some clarification and then give the conversation back to them. Most of us, when we talk, we want to talk for half an hour. You know, ask them a question and let them start talking again. It's a very encouraging process, but it's very much how you get it there. They're black swans, they're hidden information, they're secret hidden cards where you make great deals.
The two greatest questions start with the words what or how. Explain that.
What and how. People love to be asked how to do something, or people love to be asked, you know, what about this works for you? Of the list of open-ended questions that you could use, what and how are the most powerful because they make the other side feel good. In many cases, what you've just done, though, is especially with how, you've caused them to take a look at the overall situation and the context of it. And you've also caused them, you know, my first favorite way of saying no is, how am I supposed to do that? Now, there's 2 things about saying that. First of all, it's those words. But secondly, and even more importantly, is your tone of voice. Because people can either feel like you're asking for help, or you're making an accusation. I can say, how am I supposed to do that when you present me with a difficult challenge that I can't accomplish? Or I could say, how am I supposed to do that exact same words, completely different meaning, which is an accusation. And I'm signaling that I don't like what you want, and maybe even that I don't like you, which is bad for the communication. So the how question is one of the most flexible things, combined with tone of voice, to draw the other side out or even to set a boundary and say, look, I can't do that. And I need you to take a look at the whole context here. And I need you to look at me when I say, how am I supposed to do that? And that lets you know that I want to cooperate with you, but what you just put on the table just doesn't work.
And you touched on this in that explanation. Tell me more about open-ended questions and why they're so important.
Well, they invite the other side to talk. They show that you're willing to listen. And they are the most flexible overall. You can actually, you know, and some people have been running circles with the how and what questions. So how you follow up a how and what question is extremely important also. You know, every CEO on a planet has been asked, what keeps you awake at night? And they're tired of that question. Not that they're tired of the question, but as soon as they're done answering, the person that asked them doesn't listen to the answer in any way, shape, or form. And that gets us back to a little bit of the active listening or the proactive listening I talked about before. Somebody answers your question. Somebody answers your how or what question. You've got to show them that you were paying attention and that you just didn't have a preset list of things that you want to say regardless of what their response is. But there's a list of what's called the reporter's questions, the who, what, when, why, how, and where. And the how and what questions actually invite the longer answers. If I ask you when, where, who, those are all very short answers, very concise answers. They don't invite a lot of conversation. If I ask you why, even when I want to know why, you feel accused. Why did you do that? Why did you wear that shirt? Why did you get up at 7 o'clock this morning? It's one of the advantages I have as a hostage negotiator, is having me use these skills literally every culture on the planet. Interesting side note, every hostage negotiation team, whether they're in Japan, whether they're in China, whether they're in Nigeria, whether they're in Latin America, use the same skills. And these skills have been road tested in every culture, and they work on us because we're human beings. The why question in every culture on the planet, we always ask why when we think someone's doing something wrong. And we're like battered children for why. We always feel accused. And so that's why we knock that off of our list of questions asked. Now, you may need to know why. You just turn it to a what question instead of saying, why did you do that? You say, what made you do that? So if you throw all the rest of these out, you're left with the what and how questions, and they're the most powerful.